Welcome to The Rink, your source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tapeleg Graylian. This week, Tom Luongo got 5 minutes for fighting, so he is out for the week. And instead, we have Eric McElhane joining me. This week, Guy Carboneau's services were no longer required. It's Don Cherry versus Ted Leonsis in the Ultimate Fighting Challenge. And the GM meetings are going on. We're going to tell you exactly what they're talking about. Welcome to The Rink.
It seems like every week we start out this podcast and I think to myself, do we really have enough to talk about? And then the NHL goes ahead and does something interesting to keep us going and keep giving us things to talk about. Of course, number one topic today as we record this Monday, Guy Carboneau fired by the Montreal Canadiens. An interesting time, an interesting move. It's very strange. Eric, I mean, this just seems like a little bit late in the game for this kind of thing to be happening.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I tell you, what gets me about this is just how personally cutting a decision this has got to be for Bob Gainey. I mean, he was teammates with Carboneau for a couple of seasons in Montreal before he retired, and he won a Stanley Cup with Carboneau in '86. They were teammates on that squad during Patrick Waugh's rookie year. And then when Gainey got to, left the ice and, joined the front office in Dallas, just as soon as Carboneau's career was over in Montreal, he imported Guy to play down in Dallas. And, Guy won his third Stanley Cup with the Stars in '99 with Bob Gainey as the general manager, went to the finals again in 2000. As soon as his playing career was over, he went behind the bench in Dallas as an assistant. And as soon as Gainey got, called back to Montreal to be the GM, he made sure that Guy followed in his tailwind. And as soon as he could, he got him hired as head coach. And now here's this relationship that's, really, we're talking a relationship now that's almost 30 years old. Mm-hmm. And Gainey calls Guy into the office today and says, "I got to fire you." Can you imagine what that was like?
Yeah, it's got to be. It's got to be rough. I mean, do you think that it's purely Gainey's decision at this point?
I can't imagine that he wasn't getting some kind of pressure from management. Certainly, the fans have been calling for some kind of change in Carboneau's status now for a while. I mean, that's been there, and there's been tons of turmoil in this locker room too. I mean, there's the whole Alex Kovalev saga with him being banished from the team. There's the Kostitsyn brothers getting tied up with the criminal element. that big actually a much to do about nothing story in the French language press in Montreal. And then there's the whole Yaroslav Halak, Carey Price question, which has gone back and forth and forth and back over the past couple of months. So. A lot of things in that Montreal locker room that would seem to indicate that maybe, they needed a steadier hand. In a way, it's a lot like, what Lou Lamoriello did twice in Jersey. I mean, he went and, had Robbie Fatorik canned and put Larry Robinson behind the bench, when they won their second cup. And then, a couple of years later, he did the same thing to Claude Julien and then climbed behind the bench himself.
Yeah.
I think it was admirable in terms of accountability. As I recall, the Devils lost in the first round that year with Lamoriello behind the bench. So, but both those Devils teams, though, were good hockey teams. Mm-hmm. Especially, obviously, the team Fatorik was coaching when he got canned. That was a team that went on to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, you can't argue with that decision there when they brought in Larry Robinson, I guess, to, put a personality in there who would ease off a little bit, because Fatorik always had a rep as being a pretty intense guy, even back to when he was during his playing days. But this is going to land like a thunderclap in Montreal.
This is not the 100th anniversary team that people want to be proud of. Not by any stretch. I mean, this should be a gigantic celebration for the Canadiens fans. And if I were a fan, I'd be embarrassed at this point of all that's gone on. You're right about the Kostitsyn thing. It just where's that story been after day one? There seems like nothing, and maybe it's just more posturing. Maybe it's just more
media looking for something to talk about. But it just seems like, at least to somebody who mostly follows the Western Conference, of course, like that I do, it just seems like nothing's going on at that.
It's the kind of story that only gets reported in an original six city, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and here's the other thing that's nutty, is it's so crazy to think, all right, that when these players, you know, head out on the town and take part in the nightlife, mm-hmm. that they would meet somebody like this and not know what he's about?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that to me is not all that crazy. And unless somebody tells me that these guys did something to break the law, and that hasn't come out,
right? Then
as
there's
far as
really
I'm
nothing.
Concerned, yeah. Then what's the then these guys were simply in the wrong place in the wrong time. And sure, it's a little embarrassing, but certainly nothing to the level of what LaPresse did when they broke this story, mm-hmm. which is just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you know, and in a way, I'm sure that part of that. Redounded badly on Carboneau, even though he, what control does he have of those players when they leave the rink at night? He has none. They're right. Adults. It's just crazy. And it's, like I said, it's a story that only gets reported in Montreal. Nobody else cares anywhere else.
Yeah. Well, and with Guy Carboneau, he is now the seventh coach fired this season. And the fourth in this calendar year. This is, to me, it's just becoming insane with how, how success is make or break to that point that many coaches can get fired. I'm starting to wonder maybe every team just needs two coaches. You need a first half of the season and a second half of the season coach. And then maybe when you make the playoffs, you get a third coach and then he coaches for that point. I mean, it's just, this just seems like, this just seems ridiculous.
Well, for a couple of years now, I mean, the NHL has always had the reputation of being the one sport where the leash is shortest for a head coach. Mm-hmm. At the same time, though, I mean, which change could you really argue with in light of what's happened since the firing? Mm. Okay, sure, we got Carboneau today. Dan Bylsma. Well, certainly looks like Dan Bylsma knows what he's doing, right?
Yeah.
You know, the Pittsburgh's on a 6-game winning streak. He's won, 10 of 12
mm-hmm.
since he got behind the bench. You're going to argue with the Joel Quenneville firing? The Dennis Savard firing and Joel Quenneville coming in to replace him? Nah,
yeah.
Can't argue with that one. You can argue with the Barry Melrose replacement? Nah, can't really do that.
Well, yeah, even though they're still in the tank.
The horrible hockey team, yeah. I mean, but still, I mean, it's I'm having a tough time arguing with some of these dismissals.
Well, Senators, it hasn't really seemed to help. I can't lump the Islanders in because they were before the season, but at the same time, new head coach this year, and nothing's going there.
And now they're rallying. Can you believe this? All of a sudden, the Islanders are tough at home.
Yeah.
just when they really need that. By the way, John Tavares just broke the all-time OHL goal-scoring record, and the Islanders decide that this is the time of year that they need to go on a winning streak at home. Now they need to. At this point, they're only 5 points behind the Thrashers for the second worst record in the league. The fans there have got to be pulling what's left of their hair out.
Yeah,
now's the time. Now when they really need to tank, they're putting it all on the line. Of course, the odds are that they're going to wind up, with the way the ping pong balls go.
Right.
Even if they wound up in second, they're probably going to wind up at worst with Victor Hedman.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's going to be a franchise player. But still, I mean, it would just – to see the Islanders pass Atlanta and then wind up with the second pick instead of the first would just, drive the people on Long Island batty. They'll storm the ice, If the team is even – at that point, if the team is even, has a permanent future on Long Island.
Right. Well, yeah. I wouldn't mind considering that, the Colorado Avalanche have finally made it into that bottom five and finally are in for a draft pick. And then what do they do? Of course, they whip up on Chicago 5-1 the other day. It's like, come on, guys, you can't do anything right at this point.
Is somebody going to tell Joe Sakic to stay home?
I think that I think he's probably going to take one more lap around the ice and then retire. I think he's done. It's just too bad, but at the same time, it's probably about time. When you stick your hand into the snowblower, that's somebody telling you that something's going on, and I don't mean the Toro snowblower company either. It's time to go. I mean, it's and we're out, and believe me, I'm gonna miss him, but it's I'm sure he's feeling it's time to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's been a class act from the first shift on the ice to whenever the last might be. I'm sure he'll say goodbye to the Colorado fans one last time, like you said, and then fade into the sunset, and then do join altitude and become a broadcaster.
Oh, you know what? I don't know. You have center ice. You've seen the altitude broadcast. I don't know if I'd wish that on anybody.
Yeah, I was just reading a story. Did you read the story by Terry Fry in the Denver Post about how Colorado management is in denial about the state of the franchise?
Oh yeah, well, that's not a shocker at all. As a fan of the Avalanche, how I usually find out that that somebody is injured and is going to need surgery is that the team announces it after they've already had surgery, which has happened over and over and over. Same thing with Joe Sakic, with Jordan Leopold, with all these all these players. They start missing extended time. Oh yeah, they were just operated on for such and such. So they'll be out for 6-7 weeks, but it's the first anybody's heard of it.
Yeah, we were talking about Guy Carbonneau, weren't we?
I think somehow we were.
So what do you think about how things will go the rest of the way? I mean, Eugenie's only been behind the bench, a limited amount of time. He was behind the bench in Dallas for a little while. Actually, he was behind the bench in Dallas when they went to the finals in 91.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he obviously knows something about, how to run a team. He hasn't had a whole lot of experience since then.
Yeah.
It's been a while since he's climbed behind the bench. I mean, I'm sure he'll be able to run it just fine. I mean, we're talking about a Hall of Famer.
Right. I can't really talk to the character of him, but we saw what happened when Barry Melrose stepped behind the bench after being away, being away from the bench for so long. Now, mind you, he wasn't involved in any team, so that's quite different. We saw the same thing with the Islanders, and of course his name completely escapes me. Ted
Nolan.
Thank you. Being away and not working
out. How could you
possibly
forget the name of a former Sabres coach working with Luongo all this time?
Shh! Don't tell him. Don't tell him. I think I have a reaction now when I. I hear a name from the Sabres or whatnot, I just kind of blank out for a moment.
Tony Ludeman.
And to think I was going to make I was actually going to make kind of a point with talking about the long-term coaches such as Lindy Ruff. And now, but
can I tell you how much I don't like the way Lindy Ruff coaches?
Oh, thank you. Yes, please do. It'll be something totally different for me.
I think his reputation is totally overblown. Mm. Now, I don't really mean that. I mean, it's just, some fair and balance, into the input in the rink here.
Yeah.
No,
I agree. I get tired of the – it's not just Tom. It's a lot of Sabres fans.
Tom,
fan.
We kid because we love, my friend.
He's off. He got the five-minute major, so he's off this week. It's okay.
And the game
misconduct?
He'll
just have to bite. He'll just have to deal with it.
The refs have sent him straight to the locker room.
Exactly. You're done for
the week,
buddy.
Wait out there,
pal. No, it is. It does seem like just about every Sabres fan has kind of drank the Kool-Aid and hates the management, loves the coach. And after a while, you have to wonder. Well, if everybody else is changing out coaches about every 3 to 4 seasons, when the Buffalo Sabres fail, why is it still not Ruff's fault? Why is it when the Nashville Predators fail, it's still not coaching fault? I don't understand how that exactly works.
Well, I'll say this about the Nashville Predators. I mean, a lot of what happened with Nashville the past couple seasons has been obviously, generated by unstable ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you think about some of the players that have spent the last few seasons in Philadelphia, actually one who just got moved to Phoenix. He's talking about Scotty Upshaw, mm-hmm. Kimmo Tiiminen, and Scott Hartnell. We're talking about heart and soul guys on that team getting shipped out of town. That's what happens when you subtract players like that from a team that was really like one of the best in the NHL 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and now is with the help of a late season surge is now back into the race in the West. I mean,
and of course they also shipped out Thomas Vokoun, which was a huge.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they've managed to take care of that hole pretty good in goal. I mean, they've managed to, you know, fill that spot pretty easily.
After some trauma and some interesting times, it's just, when was the last time that Nashville won a single round of the playoffs?
They haven't won a single round at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's still, and still Barry Trotz has been there from day one.
Along with David Boyle, the GM.
Mm-hmm. So I can understand the ownership question, especially in the last several years. It's just it's an interesting question when you see how much turnover in head coaches that there are, and then some of the limited success of the long term, the ones who are never going to get fired, such as Wayne Gretzky, who of course will have to fire himself basically.
Yeah.
It brings up the interesting question. So as to where the Canadiens are going to fall, I wouldn't be surprised if they make it into the playoffs now, if not just on the strength of, of fear and playing for that next contract, since, the GM is going to be staring right at the backs of their sweaters.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's going to be an interesting time. I mean, I have to say this, though. I mean, in Ganey's defense, the Matt Schneider trade certainly seemed to be working right off the bat, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, that was, again, an economic smart move there before the deadline. Didn't have to pay too much to get the man. And the fact of the matter is that he they don't have to worry about paying him next year because he's a UFA. And,
yeah.
But it's only a patchwork. I mean, their power play, which used to be, of course, one of the most dangerous in hockey the past few seasons,
mm-hmm.
just it had been nowhere until Schneider showed up. Just a couple of games ago.
Yeah.
And eventually, I guess, with the same personnel involved, with the subtraction of Mark Streit, who went to Long Island now, for reasons that I don't think any of us can fathom, mm-hmm. Losing him, really hurt that power play in ways that we never imagined.
Mm-hmm.
But you should be able to figure out a way to plug a hole when somebody like Mark Streit leaves.
Yeah.
Eventually, I guess that blame does have to go to Carboneau. I'm looking at the standings right now, and I can't quite believe that they're only 2 points out of falling out of this completely.
Oh yeah, it's such a logjam between 5 and 10 now.
5 and 10 now. It's only 2 points between 4 points between 5 and 10.
Yeah, and only two points between nuts. In and out. It's amazing. Yeah. Now the Matthew Schneider, is kind of the no brainer as soon as he became, as soon as basically the thought popped into their head, just because of the familiarity with him, of course, in Montreal, and the fact that he was playing for the Thrashers means that you could wave a Beanie Baby in front of the GM and get him. It's just they'll trade anyone for no one.
Don Waddell keeps his job. I guess it's the problem with the ownership situation there. I mean, the ownership situation in Atlanta is tied up in litigation.
Oh, yeah.
And, the fact of the matter is the folks who have their hands on the franchise aren't spending money right now because they don't even know if they're going to be able to hang on to the team. And
right.
I just read, something out of the SB Nation Thrashers blog written by a season ticket holder who went to, Don Waddell's State of the Franchise meeting with the season ticket holders, and boy, was it ugly.
Yeah.
He seemed to know right away. I mean, normally, apparently Waddell's a really charming guy who this blogger says, might have a future in politics. But instead of doing the shuck and jive this year when he showed up, he immediately just stepped behind the microphone and said, okay, questions.
Wow.
No defense of his performance. Yeah, you're exactly right. Any man who would trade Braden Coburn for Alexei Zitnik has got a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah, no, it's an ugly situation. But you're right. The ownership is a very strange situation down there. Of course, the ownership is too busy destroying the Atlanta Hawks to really pay attention to the Atlanta Thrashers these days. And maybe that's good for some of the players. They can maybe re-sign next year and just kind of surf for another season without really having to do much and not have a lot of attention paid to them.
Well, I mean, from the beginning of the year, something was really wrong in Atlanta. I think it was maybe October.
Mm-hmm.
They had a game between – they were hosting the Devils in Atlanta, which you would think, because there's so many Northeast transplants in Atlanta, might actually draw a little bit. But all you could see in the lower bowl was empty seats. I mean, you take a look at any of the photos taken there. I mean, nothing but empty seats in the Phillips Arena. Mm-hmm. It's just a terrible tragedy down there because they made the playoffs once. They sacrificed all those all that future the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And, oh, my goodness. I mean, to think that they could have had all those people in the system coming up now, and they certainly could use Braden Coburn at this point.
Oh, my goodness. Could use the Danny Heatley of old if that situation hadn't played out the way it had.
You know, I can't really blame the management.
Oh, no, not at all. I'm not blaming him for that. It was the right move. He needed it. You know, it was absolutely the right thing to do. It's just, boy, talk about somebody that you could use at this time if that situation hadn't happened.
Exactly. I mean, and then to, you know, have to deal Hosa away for, you know, parts that probably won't make a difference for, you know, another 2-3 seasons. It's just, you know, it's terrible. I mean,
well, and Eric Christensen is gone. He got dealt at the trade deadline, so that's 1/3 of it. You know, is it Kobe Armstrong? Isn't he an RFA or is he UFA?
And he's a good check.
He's a character guy. I mean, I always liked him when I saw him playing in Pittsburgh. I was really surprised that they let him go for Hosa, and it paid off at the time. But if Atlanta can hold on to that guy, I'll kind of be surprised.
Yeah, we'll find out. He's an RFA, so they can qualify him.
Yeah.
But of course, if you qualify him, you can't hang on to him for very long.
No. And Angelo Esposito has still got a gigantic question mark over his head as a prospect. Isn't he done for the season?
That's what I heard. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Just, you know, it's terrible to see, because the fact of the matter is that these expansion franchises have to turn things over eventually. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the fact of the matter is that the people in Columbus ought to be happy because they'll make the playoffs, and that's going to be, you and I were in Columbus in 2007 for the draft.
Yep.
That's going to be a very loud building come playoff time.
Oh yeah. And I was there for some of the training camp this season. And it was the vibe there was certainly one of hope, and that the team actually has a lot of really good components that are gelling, and it's something that they really haven't had before.
And I really like that Pascal Leclerc for Antoine Vermette deal on the Columbus side. I mean, Vermette is just another one of those character depth players that Ottawa seemed to generate over the years. Mm-hmm. And who, you know, guys like Mike Fisher, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Guys like Brooks Like, who's now with the Capitals, he came out of the Ottawa system. Mm-hmm. You know, they seem to just generate these guys who can score between, you know, 18 and 25 goals a year, be responsible on both sides of the puck, and are just solid citizens.
Yeah.
They seem to find those guys for so long, and they totally filled out that lineup. And you know, just a great deal for Columbus.
And terrific. They couldn't have made that deal if Steve Mason weren't turning on like he is.
Yeah, exactly. The rookie of the year. Yeah. Hands down, rookie of the year. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, speaking of, since you mentioned the Capitals, how are you liking all the moves that they made at the trade deadline? Oh, never
mind. Let me tell you something. the folks here are not terribly concerned. I mean, they're not. Of course, we got the problem that they're now mired in the longest losing streak that they've had under Bruce Boudreau. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're now talking 4 straight losses, 3 in regulation, all at home. And, you know, normally around the trade deadline, you figure, well, you know, you got to do something. And here's the thing, is that George McPhee, as a general manager, has completely mastered the cone of silence when it comes to controlling the information flow into and out of that organization. Mm-hmm. I mean, last year at the deadline, we had absolutely no indication that anything was going on. Okay, and then all of a sudden he pulled out 3 deals out of nowhere. You know, grab Fedorov, grab Huey, grab Matt Cook, and two of those 3 deals really, really worked. I mean, if he doesn't do those deals, I think it's safe to say the Caps don't make the playoffs last year, because Huey was really the cornerstone on that run to the final, the run to the playoffs there. You know, where they got in by a point over Carolina. So, but this year, I mean, the Caps are in a very, very interesting position because they've got a lot of salary cap issues. I mean, they're in tight against the cap, mostly because, you know, the Michael Nylander contract is just dead weight now. Mm-hmm. He really didn't fit in with who Bruce Boudreau wanted this team to be. Got hurt early in Boudreau's tenure, was lost for the season, so he really wasn't part of the room. And came back this year, and once again, you know, after maybe a nice opening game, and he's had a couple of games where he's done well, and you know, he's not terrible, but he certainly isn't justifying that contract number.
Yeah, how much more time is on his contract?
Oh, he's got another good 2 seasons on that deal after this one, and you can't justify a cap hit of nearly $4.9 million a season when you're playing that way.
Right.
Not on this squad. And that salary has really complicated things. It made it very, very difficult for the team to make other moves. And I think the most obvious one that everybody sees on the surface is that the Caps have a player in Hershey by the name of Carl Alsner, defenseman, who's ready for the NHL right now. He's ready for the NHL at the beginning of the season. But because of the cap situation, they had to keep him down there.
Yeah.
The word is now is that Nylander will probably be bought out in the offseason, you know, to clear some cap room. I also think, you know, there's a chance that Sergei Fedorov, who comes in at $4 million for this season, will probably not be back. Viktor Kozlov may not be back.
Which is too bad about Fedorov, because at a slightly lower cap hit, that's a heck of a deal. For somebody who can play up front and in the back, you know?
And they certainly needed him the other day when, Tom Pody went down after 7 seconds.
Yeah.
And they had to slip somebody back on defense. So,
a weird situation again, because from what I'd read, the point of that, of him playing those 7 seconds, was basically so they could make a call up on the IR.
Exactly. Which tells you exactly how tight they are.
Right. And then what happens, he's playing on, he played in the Penguins game on Sunday.
Yep.
So I guess he wasn't that bad off, maybe? I don't know.
I think it's safe to say he wasn't that bad off.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, nobody's pressing the panic button here despite the recent struggles. I mean, the games against Carolina and Florida were just horrific to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, they just were completely overwhelmed in both games, and not really in both. The game without Ovechkin, the effort was there, but in a lot of ways the team looked lost against Toronto. Mm-hmm. Game they lost 2-1. And then yesterday against Pittsburgh, they were back to being the team they've been for most of the season. It's just that you lose in the you lose in the shootout, It's a coin flip.
Yeah.
And if anything, I mean, I could say that the Caps have hit bottom and they're turning it around. I mean, it certainly appeared that way. With the game. I mean, for once, they were hitting with some authority. They're playing very, very physical, which is really their weak point. I mean, if you look back at a game they played against the Flyers back on the 22nd of February, that the Flyers, came back from 2-0 down to win 4-2. That game crystallized the problems with the team. In that, they didn't seem to be able to stand up to the physical pounding that Philadelphia gave them. The lack of a real solid physical stay-at-home defenseman who can clear somebody out of the crease, out of in front of the crease, really seemed to hurt, because they were just running Theodore all game long, really effectively screening him. And they just didn't give up. I mean, Philadelphia, hung on to their, onto the upper part of their skate like a pit bull and just wouldn't give in. They wouldn't fold their tent, and, kept doing the basic things that Philadelphia always really does well: be physical on the forecheck, screen the goalie, run the goalie, and just throw that puck on net and force the Capitals into stupid penalties. Mm. And you get on the power play, and Philly's power play is just deadly. I mean, it's a great thing to watch. I mean, if you can detach yourself from being a fan of another hockey team, you watch Philly's power play.
I have no feelings really about the Flyers, so I can watch. I feel like I can actually watch them. I was pretty. I think it was pretty shocking that when the Avalanche actually beat the Capitals. I think that was, and then of course couldn't win against anybody else to save their lives. But that was
including that classic game last week against the Islanders, right?
Oh yeah, classic. Let me tell you, that's. Did anybody actually watch that thing? I think I saw like half a period, and I said, I'm an Avs fan, and this isn't worth it. I can't do it.
I knew something was wrong on Versus in the middle of last month when they started promoing the Flyers-Red Wings game that's in the middle of March.
Yeah.
And I said, I guess they're not really happy about their schedule the next few weeks.
Oh, even the announcers were pissed off. It's like, what, did you lose a bet? That's why you have to call this thing? They were not happy.
They lost a bet with NBC.
They're like, oh, let's see. Someone's got the puck. Who plays for the Avalanche these days? Is that Ryan Smith? I can't tell. It's just
because he hasn't been playing like Ryan Smith the last few seasons.
And I think he cut his hair, didn't he? That's just without the flowing locks. It's either him or Hannon with the flowing locks, and that's it.
We're really off the punch list, aren't we?
Oh, yeah, pretty much. Sorry.
It's okay.
No, I think for the Capitals at the trade deadline, for me, I think like a lot of people did, that maybe they'd pick up some goaltending help with Johnson down. I guess as you're saying with the with where their cap space is at, they were kind of handcuffed there.
Yeah, not only just handcuffed for now, but handcuffed for the future, because I mean the story that everybody's hearing now, of course, is that the Caps actually inquired about Chris Pronger, and Ted Leonsis, owner of the team, wrote a very straight ahead piece on his own blog where he obliquely referred to a deal, and he said it was kind of funny how this one franchise expected us to serve as their entire rebuild with this one trade. And the fact of the matter is that when you trade young talent for established veteran talent, you're not only just trading, you know, today for tomorrow, you're trading to, you know, tomorrow's cap flexibility for today as well.
Right. Yeah. No, and then with as long as it was on his contract, I'm even surprised they were considering it.
Yeah, so I mean, he's only got one season left, and the fact is that when you've got young players, and two young players who were going to be the cornerstone of the deal were Alsner and John Carlson, who a lot of folks think is going to make the jump straight from junior to the NHL next year. Mm-hmm. But you know, he's a big puck moving defenseman with a booming shot who can man the point on the power play. I mean, he's the kind of guy who he's almost like a Pronger type, and. You know, if you move those guys, the problem becomes is that's two bodies that are on entry-level contracts. And as long as you got somebody on the entry-level contract, they're going to play for you inexpensively. And that's going to give you other flexibility in other spots in your lineup when guys like Nick Backstrom and Alexander Semin come up for new contracts come 2010, 2011. Mm. So... You know, they're both going to be RFAs, you know, after the 2009-2010 season. And you need to be able to slot other people into the lineup for reasonable prices to be able to afford that kind of talent on the upside, especially when you're looking at a situation where, you know, the cap is going to be stagnant or going down.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So they're really handcuffed in a lot of ways.
And yeah, what was it we heard a lot during the trade deadline that people weren't concerned about the cap next year as the cap the year after that, because the vast majority of next year's cap has already basically been set with the beginning of the year's revenues, which were solid.
Mm-hmm. And what in the world this is going to be a huge, huge summer for the NHL in terms of revenue, because they're going to find out right away what's going to happen to the cap in 2010, 2011, because they're going to see, you know, what renewals come in, what advertisers are up, who goes away. And this is the other thing, is that there are a lot of, I'm sure you see, there are a lot of sports teams that rely on advertising from auto companies. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at a situation where, you know, two of the big three may very well declare bankruptcy. Talk about GM and Chrysler going in, Ford's in a little bit better shape.
Yeah.
But, I mean, heck, GM cut off Ken Burns.
Yeah, I saw that today, they're no longer sponsoring his PBS documentaries.
I'm sure somebody else will step up for that. But
that's a pretty smart move nonetheless for them right now, just because they don't have any money. How do you say, government, I need all this money, and then hand it over to Ken Burns?
Yeah, true enough.
A little tough sale there.
Exactly. So there are going to be a lot of folks who are going to be pulling out of deals, canceling deals, and so forth. At the same time, maybe that's an opportunity for some new advertisers to come in and grab some attention on the NHL in a way that, you know, may actually be more economical.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, look at how Honda took over for Dodge.
Yeah, that's for sure. They certainly had no problem stepping in there and taking that sponsorship away from them. Probably better long-term for the NHL anyway.
I love what you mentioned, by the way, about GM, George McPhee, keeping a very tight lip on the team, especially when he has an owner in Ted Leonsis that has his own blog and seems to put out as much information as he feels like he wants to anytime he likes. It's got to be an interesting little dichotomy there, trying to keep a hold on what's going on with the team and then at the same time an owner that loves to sell.
Well, you know, but I don't see any kind of conflict between the two of them, that's for sure. I think they're both on the same page. And the fact of the matter is that at the very beginning of last season, a lot of the folks around town who follow the team pretty intensely, and of course I'm talking about my blogging friends like people from Japers Rank and On Frozen Blog and, you know, Peerless Prognosticator and all the rest, really thought that, you know, McPhee was on the hot seat at the beginning of last season. And if he didn't show some results, that he could very well be, you know, in some trouble. And as it turned out, you know, with the way things wound up at the end of the season, with them qualifying by 1 point, beating Carolina out by 1 point for the division title, they essentially waited till the last possible moment they could to get rid of Glenn Hanlon and bring in Bruce Boudreau. Mm-hmm. That's how close run a thing it was last season. Between that and then Chris W. Way falling in their laps and Sergei Fedorov falling in their laps, which I think has been nothing but a good thing for the team, you know, that's how razor thin the margin was last season. And, you know, the margin's not that razor thin now. I mean, this team is going to make the playoffs. This team is going to win the Southeast Division. It's going to have nothing less than a 3 seed, although, you know, the New Jersey Devils aren't too far ahead of them at this point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're not going to have anything worse than a 3 seed. And, you know, they may be as high as 2. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think the expectations are obviously jacked a lot higher. You know, the season will be considered a grand disappointment if they don't get out of the first round.
Right.
I think some of the talk that we had about 3 weeks ago of this team pile driving its way all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals has been tamped down a bit, and I think it's probably a good thing. Mm-hmm. Because this team is still young, and outside of Fedorov, there really isn't a whole lot of, like, you know, considered veteran presence on this team.
Right.
You know, and of course you take, you know, the Gary Roberts example is the guy who, you know, the personality you'd like to see in the locker room. But, you know, you don't see that outside of Fedorov. You don't see that on the Capitals. But,
well, it's a very different makeup of a team anyways. I mean, the personality of the Capitals, I don't think, match any other personality of any of the teams around.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I can't knock, you know, McPhee for standing pat. Mm-hmm. In terms of what he needs to do with cap management going into next year. He clearly had to do this. There was no way to pick up anybody in a method that was going to be affordable, you know, because it would have meant moving somebody, because they're at the maximum 50 player contracts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're kind of, everything is up against the cap real tight. It's difficult, and they're just going to have to figure out a way to work themselves out of it. You know, they don't have an easy road the next 2 games. They go to Nashville this week, and then they go to Philadelphia. And Philly's the one team that's got their number, totally got their number this year.
Well,
and
hopefully they're going to make, you know, at least win the first round, you know, so that Don Cherry has something to talk about.
He seems to have a circus.
That's such a
circus. I was laughing on Saturday night watching that on Hockey Night.
Rarely get to see, quote unquote, see Don Cherry on Coach's Corner. To me, he could barely compose a sentence. It was so hard to follow his train of thought.
He was pretty unintelligible, wasn't he?
Yeah. And boy, he sure does have it out for the Caps right now.
It certainly seems that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's the whole, you know, Crosby Ovechkin thing writ large. And, you know, I was really kind of stunned with the way that he went after Leonsis. I mean, you know, and for those who haven't seen, you know, check it out on YouTube. I wrote about it at Fan House on Saturday night, just a few minutes after it happened. And, you know, my general feeling about stuff like this is it's just a silly media war, and it doesn't do anything but promote the game.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, you know, Cherry is, you know, playing to, you know, his audience, and he's, you know, his typical xenophobic self.
Yeah.
Or he can't even figure out how to, you know, pronounce Leonsis. I mean, come on.
Yeah, when you can't pronounce it, half the time,
God knows what he's saying, you know?
Yeah. No, he's trying to stir things up, and that's, you know, it's he doesn't have to, he's not trying to talk himself into a coaching job. Like, let's say you're Mark Crawford, maybe trying to talk himself back into an NHL job. You know, he's a pure media guy now, and stirring the pot is what he does best now, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's his job. I mean, that's why the people, at Moore's Men's Clothing paid the big bucks to sponsor his segment. I mean, they're going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They love it, I'm sure. I mean, because those guys that they're selling the suits to and the shirts to and the ties to are Cherry's demographic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're probably going crazy. And I know this. The folks in Washington really are not enjoying this.
Mm-hmm.
They are not. And I know that Ted Leonsis takes what Cherry said. You know, doesn't take – he's taking the high road. I don't want to say he's not he's taking him seriously, because he's not, but I definitely in talking or in seeing some of the things that people on the PR staff have written, and seeing some of the stuff that Leonsis has written, there's definitely a, you know, sort of a resignation, like, oh, do we really need to do this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, about Cherry, and you know, the fact of the matter is that Leonsis has been saying, you know, things about Cherry that the President Obama says about Rush Limbaugh. He made that same direct comparison on his blog a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd rather be talking about something else. I know that for, you know, that's pretty clear. But in the end, nobody's really getting hurt. And it's just, you know, promoting the talk is promoting the game.
Yeah.
And, it's just
taking that any publicity, even bad publicity, is still good publicity.
Yeah.
Is that what's.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I only subscribe to that.
Cherry's the clown at the circus.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a PR guy by any stretch of the imagination, but I only subscribe to that theory for so long, and then after a while, it just becomes, well, once you start beating the dead horse, it doesn't seem like any PR is good PR anymore.
You know, yeah, I mean, this has gone on a week too long.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of surprised that Cherry brought it up again, but I think Cherry's the kind of guy that if you come after him, if he doesn't have the last word.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to start swinging again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll be, you know, interested to see what he does on Saturday night. I'm sure the people at Moore's want him to keep going.
when was the last time, maybe you'll know, that the Capitals were actually featured on Hockey Night in Canada at all? I mean, when was the last time they
played? They've been on a couple games this year. Yeah. They played the Maple Leafs on a Saturday night. In Toronto, and they played the Canadiens on a Saturday night at the Bell Center.
Oh.
Because I remember that was the night that Semyon Varlamov got one of his two starts that he won.
Hmm.
Yeah, so he shut down the Canadiens in the Bell Center. Just was a great performance on his part. And I'm pretty sure, yeah, the Caps won that night in Toronto as well. So, yeah, they've been on a couple nights.
Yeah, the odds are they would have.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, eventually somebody's got to visit Toronto on a Saturday night. And,
yeah.
You know, the fact of the matter is the league wants Alex Ovechkin and, of course, Sidney Crosby as well visiting Toronto on a Saturday night at least once a year.
Mm-hmm.
So they could feature him on Hockey Night in Canada. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they're getting gypped in terms of that kind of attention. You know, my problem has always been with the league promoting Crosby to the exception of all else, when there are so many other players that are getting it done in this league, in a league that's got, you know, international appeal, you know, definitely Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk and Nick Lidstrom, all on one team, deserve plenty of attention as well. That's for sure.
And who has the best commercial of any of the NHL commercials right now? Braden Coburn.
Yeah. Wow. That's a great little ad for Versus, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's been running all season.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's been a good campaign, and actually, he's been the best one on it.
No, I have. You know, it's funny. You know, there are all these ads you see all the time. I've never gotten tired of the Braden Coburn ad.
Yeah, no.
Probably because it's so close to, you know, who he really is.
Yeah, no, it's
obviously
it's very close
get 100% of that, but yeah, it's pretty close to who the guy who Coburn is.
Yeah, you should see the. I don't know if you've seen them. There's these really spooky ones on altitude for the avalanche that just look like a bad noir film.
You really got it in for these guys, don't you?
For altitude? Oh yeah. No. I'm just, you know, yes. I'm just over the happy, slappy, ha-ha, look at me. I'm, you know, everything's the best thing in the world. You know, if you know, a player could go out on the ice, stab another player with a knife, cut out his heart, eat it, and they would say that was a solid veteran move on altitude. It's just ridiculous.
Why do I hear Peter McNabb's voice in the back of my brain now?
No, not at all. Not at all. And this is exactly why when that report was it, I believe it was on Chris Botta's blog about whether or not the Islanders should be taking the newspaper beat reporters on flights with them and help pay for travel. This is exactly why I said no, that's a bad idea. Last thing that you need is more people being hired by the teams to put out to push out the media. It just does not have to happen. Well, we had so much to talk about, Eric and I, that we're just going to have to put it out in another episode coming out later on this week. You can find my blog, of course, over at jerseysandhockeylove.com. You can find Eric's writing all over the internet, such as Offwing Opinion at www.offwing.com, NHL Fanhouse at nhl.fanhouse.com, or the Sporting Blog at www.sportingnews.com. All those links, of course, can be found on our website, which is www.rinkpodcast.com. You can email the Rink at rink@rinkpodcast.com, or always you can call us at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you later in the week on The Rink.